tomorrow. Ambassador College presents Garner Ted Armstrong, bringing you the plain truth about today's world news and the prophecies of the world tomorrow.
And greetings, friends around the world. It's about time you heard some good news for a change, because most of today's world news is bad. And anyone even seeking to define or to try to unravel the fantastic conditions of this present world is doomed to disappointment. In the words of world leaders, this world has had its last chance, and we're on a collision course with possibly the annihilation of all humankind. It's an age of baffling contradictions, an age of fantastic advances in space and technology, an age of scientific betterment, an age of the promise of breakthrough for longer life, for the solution to some of the big problems that have plagued mankind in the medical field, for perhaps more of all the material wealth, at least in the Western world. But at the same time, it's an age where we do not yet know our own purpose on this earth, and we don't know where we're going. As I said, anyone seeking to define this age is doomed to disappointment, and the reason is because it's difficult enough even to get the facts to find out what kind of an age it is. Taking the problems in order, you would end up just about as much a pessimist as most of the world leaders you hear from. And some of the pessimistic statements you're hearing from world leaders are about all you can take today. Now, if you're like the average Mr. and Mrs. Citizen, you're a little disgusted with the bad news you hear. You didn't make this world the way it is. You had nothing to do with it, or so you feel. You're an innocent bystander caught up in the vortex of world conditions you can little understand and are absolutely powerless to change. And yet you wish it didn't have to be this way. You wish you lived in a different world. You're tired of the threats of violence, of long, hot summers. You're tired of hearing on your news agencies nothing but the local crime, the international war, the threat of the population explosion, of growing drought and famine, of all of the problems of the dissolution of marriage, of the threat of the destruction of the very building blocks of society, the home. And you're good and sick and tired of all the doomsday predictions of a world of increasing violence. And you know, I don't blame you, so am I. And that's what this World Tomorrow program is all about. To tell you about a world with solutions. To tell you, first of all, in a calm look at all of society the way it is today, what is truly wrong with the world, how it got this way, and where are we going, just where are we headed, what is the future? President Johnson said in a recent address to the nation of the world, this will be a disorderly planet for a long time to come. There will be turbulence and struggle and even open violence, and the complexities of this world do not bow easily to pure and consistent answers, he said. We often say, how impressive power is, said the president, but I do not find it impressive. The guns and bombs, the rockets and warships are all symbols of human failure. They are witness to human folly. We may well be living in a time foretold many years ago when it was said, and then of all things, if you'll forgive the President of the United States for doing this, he said, he was quoting from the Bible, he said, I call heaven and earth to record this day against you, that I have set before you life and death, blessing and cursing, therefore choose life, that both you and your seed, your children, your progeny, may live. And then the President said, this generation of the world must choose, destroy or build, kill or aid, hate or understand. Is this generation choosing the right path? On this program and a series of programs that follow, I have outlined for you the entire picture of present-day world conditions. And then what all the world leaders, from leading military and governmental personnel to leaders in the United Nations, to scientists and technologists, to leaders in the field of education, leaders in the field of economics, leaders in the social order, civil rights workers, you name them, I've got it all. The accurate pulse-taking and appraisal of this world the way it really is, and your chances for survival, your chances for the future. Where, then, are we headed today? World leaders almost unanimously say you're living in one of two times. Either the moment of the absolute annihilation of all humankind in the very near foreseeable future, or that last moment of a true breakthrough, of entering into an era of untold prosperity and plenty and peace for all mankind from now on out. And that's a fact, and I verily believe it. because you're living in just such a time. It's going to be one or the other. Now, telling a group of wounded Vietnam War veterans recently, it would be some time before there is any peace on this earth. President Johnson said this, and I quote his words, "I wish I could tell you that peace in the world is just around the corner, but it will be some time and there will be difficult days ahead." He spoke to these veterans, wounded men returning from the battlefield in Vietnam, in a low voice. He told them he wanted to let the American people know we are in a time of trial, a time of testing, a time of uncertainty. And his predecessor, the late John F. Kennedy, once said in a news conference, and I quote his words, "We happen to live in the most dangerous time in the history of the human race." And he said, "We are destined, all of us here today, to live out most, if not all, our lives in uncertainty and challenge and peril." These are true statements. These men have no religious axe to grind. They're not trying to be alarmist. I know that many times when you try to appraise world conditions, people say, "Well, what's this? An alarmist? A doomsday prophet trying to tell you about all the gloom and the agonies of today?" Well, you hear enough of the bad news, but it's about time we began to understand why. It's about time we began to do more than pick over and hash over the problems on the world and to find out where are the solutions. But we're being conditioned to know solutions. We're being told by most world leaders and by the weekly news magazines, by the news broadcasts you hear, that we have to get used to living in a time of giant problems with no solutions in sight. This is the story today. Recently, for example, Professor Samuel Eliot Morrison concluded, "We have got to get used to living without solutions." He said, "We live in a time of spectacular change. We react to the unprecedented events of our days with frustration, fear, and confusion. Headlines hammer at us about aggression and automation, discovery and delinquency, nuclear fallout and narrowing freedoms." And he asked this question, "What is significant about the events that convulse our times? Where are we and where are we going?" Well, my friends, most people simply do not know. Now, one historian, Arnold J. Toynbee, said, "If we are able to survive, we're going to live in danger from here on." And most predictions of the world that you hear are only telling you about the present world, except more so. About more crowded conditions, about bigger cities, our big growing megalopolises of today getting bigger and bigger until they virtually girdle the entirety of the nation. All the predictions for the future tell you about big breakthroughs, yes, in science, in technology, in industry, in the glittering gadgetry with which we can surround ourselves with an ever more dizzying array of playful toys, so that 6% of the population of the earth can indulge itself in fantasies and a Disneyland pastime of indulgence and ease while we... What do we do about India? What do we do about Africa? About Asia? What do we do about the agonized cries of the millions of people around the world and the growing escalation of war and the threat of nuclear proliferation? What do we do about the population explosion? What do we do about the fact of growing drought and famine? What do we do about the threat of disease? Nearly every one of these predictions about the future follows, it seems, one of two extremes. Either it is of the wildest, almost incredible optimism of a lot of scientific people telling you about extending your life for another X number of years. The wildest optimism about trading your old heart in for a new one, and about the miniaturization of the gadgetry, as I've mentioned, or about the solution to the common cold and a cure for cancer and this and that and the other thing. A helicopter on every yard was one prediction. More and more leisure time, less and less work, more and more money, and more things to do with your money. All these wild predictions. This is the one extreme, the wildest optimism, or, on the other extreme, of the deepest gloom. Of the very imminent possibility of absolute annihilation of all humankind, and not only humankind, but every life form on the face of the earth. Now also, Mr. Johnson said, "Mankind must put an end to war, or war will put an end to mankind. Today, every inhabitant of this planet must contemplate the day when this planet may no longer be habitable. Together we shall save our planet, or together we shall perish in its flames." So here you have the two opposites. They either tell you it's going to get better and better and seem to ignore the big problems, or they seem to ignore all there is that's good, and they tell you it's going to get worse and worse and there's no hope. Well, now the question is, can you, the layman, come to know the answers one way or the other, or are you doomed to sit like a a sort of a professional spectator, forever on the sidelines, watching other people, watching conditions and situations over which you have absolutely no control, and just hearing what is fed you, kind of being spoon-fed all the information about conditions on this earth today. You know, this is the way most of us have come to feel, and that's why the average person seeks escape. That's why the average person simply denies the way world conditions really are. He doesn't like to admit it. He likes to play what I've called hide and go seek, hide his eyes from the reality of present conditions and go seek his own pastimes and pleasures. And so you see growing alcoholism and drug addiction and theater going, and is anything wrong with theater going? Well, I'm not grinding an axe against that. I'm just saying that it's a part of our modern world today of the fantastic sales in pleasure, equipment, and materials such as boats and airplanes and the trips that people take. The very fact that the government is now on an urgent program to try to get people to see America first and pulling servicemen back from Germany to stop the dollar outflow, and even tourism is having a great deal to do with that, because people are seeking escape from their geographical location, first of all in the form of travel, then from their own marriages and homes in the form of, well, all kinds of entertainment. Take this medium, television, radio, all of the various media of entertainment that are available today. And, of course, sports, the giant new arenas of sports and the growing preoccupation with violence in sports. And so people just do not like to admit the way the world really is. As a matter of fact, in on-the-spot, on-the-street surveys in some of the leading population centers of the United States, the average person cheerfully admits it. He not only doesn't want to hear about world conditions, he doesn't even want to talk about it. And so it's difficult, as I said, to analyze and define this age because, in the first place, the average person doesn't want to talk about it. He's just heard too much about crime and violence and the threat of more. He's clear up to here with the Vietnam War and with the threat of a long, hot summer and with the daily murders and automobile accidents and all of the problems in the local area in which he lives. He just had enough. And he's good and sick and tired of being told he lives in an age without solutions, of the insoluble problem. Well, my friends, stand by for some good news. There are solutions, and this world is going to find them. Maybe not in its present form, maybe not in the way, and maybe not in the manner you might think. But I happen to know, and I have on inside authority, that there is a solution to the problems confronting this world, and that solution is world government. Now, I'm not saying anything new there. Many world leaders have talked about world government. They have said world government is the only hope for this world. For all of mankind, there is no other solution to the ills of mankind. Winston Churchill said in Copenhagen in 1950, "The creation of an authoritative, all-powerful world order is the ultimate aim towards which we must strive." And he warned, "Unless some effective world super-government can be brought quickly into action, the proposals for peace and human progress are dark and doubtful." Now, he's not alone. Many leaders, Dr. Harold C. Urey, who was a Nobel Prize winner, world-famous chemist, and he was talking before the University of California, he told them that only world government can prevent a catastrophic World War III. He said that at present, talk of a full world government is not practical, however, and he did not think that the chance of creating a world state was very likely. Dr. Charles E. Osgood of the University of Illinois said, "What we need in that most desperately and urgently is an enlivened search for new alternatives to war as a means of resolving human conflict." And then he said, and I quote his words, "A world government may be the only permanent solution." Dr. Edward Teller, noted physicist, he's the one who's been called the father of the hydrogen bomb. He said, "International law hardly exists today, yet it's one of our most vital needs. We must work for the establishment of a world authority sustained by moral and physical force, a world government capable of enforcing worldwide law." But my friends, what does this entail? World government? Look, let's talk about it for a minute. A world government means that every great race of people, it means every religion, every language, it means every governmental ideology, it means every philosophy and concept of life, must somehow find unity in one expression for all peoples. It means there has to be absolute authority, because that absolute authority would have to police the entirety of the world, and no more could any one nation follow a single autonomous chauvinistic course of action. No longer could any one nation have what you could remotely call sovereignty, but every individual country would have to give itself completely and totally to this one central dominating world authority. What are these men telling us? They're saying only World War III can be prevented by a world government. That's the only way to stop it. Winston Churchill says it's the only way to even prevent human annihilation. Dr. Edward Teller said the same thing. But they go right on to say, well, then this brings up a lot of problems. How do you enforce world government? How do you enforce law and order? How, said Dr. Teller, do you bring about such a law enforcement agency in a quick and effective and just and decent manner? He said, this is a question of enormous difficulty. I have no solution, he said, and he said, I quote, I have no particular competence to say how it should be done. Now, former President Eisenhower said, this was in a radio television speech back in 1960. He was analyzing the past and talking about how far we had come and where we're headed. He said, it had become clear by 1953 that the accumulation of atomic weapons stockpiles whose use could destroy civilization made resort to force an intolerable means for settling international disputes. Only in the rule of law, which meant the attainment of an enduring peace with justice. I'm sure you remember those words of President Eisenhower. He said them often enough. Peace with justice. Could mankind hope for guarantee against extinction? Only in the rule of law. A rule of law? A world order? A world government? What are we saying? These men are telling you the only solution to the world's ills and the only method of survival for mankind is by all nations getting together in one central world government, and we're about as far from that solution today as we have ever been. In spite of the United Nations, in spite of NATO and all the alliances, CETO and the Pan-American states and so on, we're about as far from a world government as we have ever been. And it's not likely to happen in the near future. This is something you would have to admit if you appraised the world. Yemen and Aden, the Jew-Arab crisis, the threat of a divided Berlin exploding in our faces, Britain trying to get entry into the common market, the problems of the violent overthrow of government in Africa, Central and South America, the problems of communism spreading in the Western Hemisphere, the problems always, of course, under the cover and just waiting to erupt into your news again of the Pescadores in Formosa, of nationalist China and Red China, the problems inside Red China, the problems here of one quarter of the entirety of the human race in one nation which is not recognized by the United States, the problems inside the United States of growing crime and of mounting drought conditions, and of the fact that we have assembled the largest peacetime armada in the history of the world to send most of our wheat, or so it seems, to India. Wherever you look, you see problems, problems, problems. Well, a great paradox is that while we are promised all these glowing solutions, while we're promised all the great good that science claims it's going to give us, these world leaders say, look, we're headed toward extinction or else we're going to have to come up with a world government. But we're not coming up with a world government. No nation is. The United Nations is not. And yet we're being told we don't have very much time. We're being told it's urgent. We're being told it's got to happen almost immediately. Now, on the other hand, they turn right around and tell you, though peace through law is the only solution, one world government, one world police force, this would envision, of course, one world politics, one world religion, one world language, one world educational system, all these things that go with it. Then they turn right around and almost as if with one voice and great unanimity of opinion, they tell you, world government in the hands of man would be an absolute nightmare. It is utterly impossible to accomplish. You would end up with a colossal police state, and therefore there is no solution. Well, now that just leaves you nowhere, doesn't it? You see, if you analyze it, and I can give you a lot more names than I have, Earl Attlee, Joseph Rotblat, well, on and on. World leaders from, it seems, time immemorial, whether it's Douglas MacArthur, President Eisenhower, former President Eisenhower, former President Kennedy, President Johnson, the leaders of the big nations today, they all say world government. Then other people turn around and say, well, it follows that for world government to be effective, you'd have to have this worldwide police force to which all nations would have to subscribe, and the problems are seemingly insurmountable, so therefore there is no solution. So that leaves you exactly where you started. in a world where you're being conditioned to live in gigantic problems with no solutions in sight. Well, thankfully, there does exist a solution. A step-by-step sequence of events exactly as they will work out, where this world will find world peace at last, in spite of all the predictions of today. And that source is a source to which no people would go. It's a source that most people would impugn and ridicule the moment they hear about it, because they've got a lot of opinions about it, and yet they've never read it. And that source, believe it or not, is Bible prophecy. Oh, I know you may not have realized that one full third of the Bible is prophecy. I know you may not have realized that section of the Bible purports and claims to have been written precisely for this day. And I know further that you probably don't realize that most of the big powers of Russia, China, the United States, Great Britain, Germany, and all the democracies of Northwestern Europe are identified by name in the pages of the Bible. I also know that the average person would think this is incredible, because he's been reared on a little tiny diet of the Bible, but he's grown suspicious of it, the average person, I say, because of the failures of religion, because of all the confusion in religion, because of what he's had as a youngster. He has seen the lives of religious people. He's put it together with the kind of life he wanted to lead. He doesn't see there is any sense or any shape or meaning to long prayers and old ladies in gray felt hats and the stained glass windows and steeples and all kinds of religious endeavor, and what's going on in the dog-eat-dog business world outside. And so he simply doesn't believe religion could have anything to do whatsoever with world conditions. But let me put it to you this way. Dr. Robert M. Page has said, human nature is one of the real causes of war. And he said, so long as we have human nature, we shall have wars, until human nature is changed. But how are you going to go about changing the basic heart and the attitude of man? How are you going to do this? A couple of college students wrote, they were pretty disillusioned too, in a column in a Western University newspaper. And they said, and I quote, "The hard facts of history have repeatedly demonstrated that peace is a sterile myth. What right does one have to be optimistic for world brotherhood when there is no evidence of increased understanding? We are convinced that the world is presently on a doomsday course and that our destiny is total annihilation. Any solution will be a grassroots solution that takes place on a global basis and in the hearts of men." But, they asked, who is to change the hearts of men? And there you have it. Who is going to change human nature? As Ulfant says, what is lacking that, with all of our scientific progress, we still see that peace in our time is only a sort of a fabled dream, a difficult and unattainable goal? Well, my friends, it's about time you saw that there is a solution. And I have for you a booklet that takes you right through some of these basic prophecies in the pages of your Bible that give you a calm appraisal of all of these conditions in the world exactly as they are today, and then tell you what the outcome is and show you it is accurate. This is accurate scientific reporting. This is something that makes sense. And it tells you how world peace is going to be possible, how you're going to live on over into it, the chances are, and what your chances really are of survival. World government in the hands of man would be a nightmare. But what if it's taken out of the hands of man? What if it's world government not in the hands of man, but in the words of an article that appeared in the U.S. News and World Report, if mankind is to survive, they put it this way, and I paraphrase it, we're going to have to survive only if there is some intervention by a strong hand from some place. Of course, they didn't go on to say from where. What you need to do is to write for this free booklet called The Wonderful World Tomorrow, What It Will Be Like. It's absolutely free of charge. There's no price for it. It takes a calm look at today's world exactly as it is in the eyes of world leaders, statesmen, political leaders, military leaders. It tells you in the eyes and from the minds of scientists exactly what this world is like. It gives you all of their predictions, and then it tells you exactly what Bible prophecy says will come to pass in the future, in your lifetime. Now, this booklet is absolutely without solicitation. There is no follow-up. There is no charge, no cost. No one's going to call on you. We're not after you to try to get something from you. All I've said on this broadcast, these are facts I've quoted to you from, well, perhaps too many people. Many, many world leaders, men whose names you have recognized, and they're not kidding. They mean exactly what they say. This booklet, The Wonderful World Tomorrow, What It Will Be Like, tells you also exactly what I'm all about, what this program is all about, what it stands for, what we're trying to do, and exactly what you can expect to happen in the world tomorrow. Now, in addition to this booklet, The Wonderful World Tomorrow, What It Will Be Like, also write for this booklet, 1975 in Prophecy. We're setting no dates, but 1975 in Prophecy gives you a step-by-step sequence of events exactly as your Bible says they will occur in the next few years, right around the corner from you today. Making come to life what you're reading in your daily newspapers, except you will have the information before it happens. I've said the major nations are identified in the pages of Bible prophecy, and they are. And you can see that proved when you write for the other companion booklet on the United States and the British Commonwealth in prophecy. Find where the big powers of the world are mentioned. In some of the books you've heard only mentioned briefly, perhaps in the past, Isaiah, Ezekiel, Daniel, Hosea, and other books of the Bible. The United States and the British Commonwealth in prophecy shows you where the Australians, the Canadians, South Africans, Britons, and Americans are identified, and you will be astounded to find why it is only 6% of the population of this earth enjoys fully 50% of its wealth, and also why it is that we seem to inherit almost automatically the really big problems of the world, that it seems wherever there is a trouble spot, it falls squarely on the shoulders, increasingly narrowing shoulders, I might add, of John Bull or Uncle Sam. The United States and the British Commonwealth in Prophecy is absolutely free of charge. So are all the other booklets I've mentioned. So here they are again, so you be sure to jot them down. I know I've mentioned several of them. The Wonderful World Tomorrow, What It Will Be Like. That's just by the same title as this radio program, The World Tomorrow Booklet. Then the one on the United States and the British Commonwealth in Prophecy. Then the booklet entitled 1975 in Prophecy. And, of course, the Plain Truth Magazine. They are, again, The Wonderful World Tomorrow, What It Will Be Like. Just mention the World Tomorrow booklet, mention the United States in Prophecy booklet, and mention the date 1975 in Prophecy. We'll send them all absolutely free of charge, no price, no follow-up. No one requests anything from you, no blank checks, no envelopes to put money in and all that type of thing. No one's going to be calling on you. It's free of charge if you write to Herbert W. Armstrong, Post Office Box 111, Pasadena, California, for your free copy. And there's no follow-up, no request for money, no bill to follow. It's free of charge if you send your name and address to Herbert W. Armstrong, Box 111, Pasadena, California. And also, while you're at it, write for the Plain Truth Magazine. 52 pages, full color, free of charge, articles all through the Plain Truth, analyzing today's world conditions in the light of Bible prophecy. Now, here in this current number with Wilson in Bonn, What Colleges and Universities Do Not Tell You, the article on A Whale of a Tale or The Dilemma of Doubting Dolphins, a subject on evolution. And then also the article for a lot of you who have wondered about it, What Do You Mean, The Unpardonable Sin, and this continuing article on how prophecy comes alive in today's world news. This is in full color. It's absolutely free of charge. There is no price for it whatsoever. You'll receive it by return mail if you write to Herbert W. Armstrong, Post Office Box 111, Pasadena, California. And so until next time on this series on Daily on Radio, where you can hear the world tomorrow every day in your area by getting the radio log in the Plain Truth Magazine, you'll find out where. This is Garner Ted Armstrong saying goodbye, friends.
You have heard The World Tomorrow. Send your letters to Herbert W. Armstrong, Post Office Box 111, Pasadena, California.